Bon Jovi.
Woo!
See, two sessions. You got to get through this one first. Hopefully everybody took a nap. We will have no passing out in my talk. I heard that happen in one of the other talks. That's what good knowledge will do for you. My name is Israel Vega. I am based out of Tampa, Florida. With me on stage is Nathan Miller, and he is based out of Dallas.
Woohoo!
Go Dallas. We're both claims nerds. We've been claims nerds for approximately a year now. And we presented this talk internally at Microsoft, and we helped teach some of the Ignite program for some of your partners may have seen me or seen some of this content before. This is specifically around taking you from classic to claims or from SAML to claims, Windows claims to SAML claims and such. This is a 400 level talk. We will be showing some PowerShell. We have a little bit of code, but not much to show. But it's pretty deep, and it goes pretty deep pretty fast. If we haven't lost you by about the third scenario, we plan on losing you by the fourth scenario. So we're going to try to take you on a nice trip through there. When you walk out of here today, we really don't want you to understand specifically what exactly it is we need to do, but we do want you to understand the mechanics of what it takes to actually move your sites over to claims. If you haven't gotten the message by now, Windows SharePoint 2013, SharePoint Server 2013 will be claims mode, and you will be moving, whether you like it or not. Some assumptions that we have for you is you have built a custom claims provider or have worked a little bit with trusted identity providers. Who has not in the audience, who does not know what a claim provider is? All right, a few folks. All right, we'll try to walk you through. And then bonus, have you built one? Are you a dev? And you're in here to test your IT chops. Nobody's built a few custom claim providers. All right, so we'll take it easy on you. How we're going to do it, we're going to walk through. We're going to show you a little bit about what's new for claims in 2013. We'll talk you through the common migration scenarios. And that's going to help you on your roadmap of which particular types of migration you're actually going to be doing. And then towards the end, we've got some gotchas and some wrap up. Along the way, we also have some demos that we're going to show you. Before we get started, I want to get this out of the way for those keeping track and keeping score at home. This is my gratuitous Metro slide, so check. I do have a picture of a Surface, and I have a reference to the cloud. So I have met the criteria for a SharePoint talk. This claims migration will be part of your entire SharePoint 2013 upgrade cycle. When we talk about it in different phases. First phase is learn. You're going to go ahead and learn about some of this stuff. You're going to prepare your environments. You're going to test, implement, and validate. The two specific areas around migration that we focus on for this talk is around validate and test. That's where we're focusing on. A little bit on learn and prepare, but not much. Implement will be something that you do. So what's new? Claims is the default authentication mode. So Windows claims, there's two different flavors of claims. I'll get to that in a little bit, of what the difference is. We have added some better logging. So if you've done this before, you've done SAML claims, there wasn't a lot of logging in SharePoint 2010. 2013, they did a really good job of adding some additional logging so that you know what's going on when something does go wrong. Server affinity is no longer required. So in 2010, you had to have sticky sessions. What we're doing in 2013 is we're actually pushing that token up into Velocity Cache, and then Velocity Cache is going to hold that token, and that cache is available for all the web front ends. So you don't have to have sticky sessions for claims anymore. We've made a few claims to Windows Token Service enhancements. Some of the information around claims to Windows Token Service, you'll get more around some of the different talks here, specifically around BI scenarios when you're using claims. We'll touch a little bit on what the problem is, and we'll touch a little bit about how to get around it, but you're going to get more information about that in some other talks. And then claims encoding pre-configuration, that's something that was there that we added as part of the June CU of SharePoint 2010. If you're not in the June CU, you don't get these enhancements, but I do have some slides that talk about what you do when you don't have the June CU. Within there, we added some support for Migrate User and some additional support for encoding your claim types. So around Migrate User, being able to parallelize your content migration upgrade when you're moving from classic to Windows claims, that's what we added there on the enhancement side. All SharePoint identity and SharePoint claims identities are not equal. So when we say SAML, when we say Windows claims, when we say SAML claims, you really have to ask the question, well, what type of claims are you actually talking about? Because there's actually different types. You won't see this called out specifically in the documentation around the different types, but they're just different flavors. And when you say SAML claims, you really have to understand what type of claim I'm actually doing. When I'm looking at FBA, FBA is sort of claims. Underneath the covers, we represent that as a string that is represented internally as a claim. But FBA claims is not the same as SAML claims, and it's not the same as Windows claims. SAML claims are issued by SharePoint STS. So those are the claims that after you authenticate, you're going to go get the STS is going to validate your information, and it's going to issue some claims and reissue all the other claims that came in. Those claims are the ones that we're talking about when we say SAML claims. When we say Windows claims, those are the ones where it came from a classic or an NTLM Kerberos ticket. I authenticate it to IIS, and then internally in SharePoint, we take that Kerberos representation or that NTLM representation of your identity, and we transfer that and turn those into Windows claims. Those are also issued by the SharePoint SDS, but internally, those are treated differently. Those are issued by Windows and issued by SharePoint, and we treat those a little bit special. When we talk about SAML claims, I hinted briefly about the different types that are issued. If they're issued by the SharePoint SDS, that's one type of SAML claim. Another type of SAML claim are the ones that you actually manage and maintain or come that either you augment through claims augmentation in the claim provider, or you actually get those from the identity provider. So just keep in mind that there are different kinds, and we'll talk through the differences as well throughout the talk. Classic is not claims. So classic, when you hear the word classic, you're actually not able to create a classic web app through the UI. You actually have to create that through PowerShell. We have some PowerShell samples to show you around that. So classic is kind of hiding in the background. Click. When you are migrating, here's some things that you've got to consider. You've got to consider your farm and web app configuration, and here we're talking about is the different claim providers that you have. So you've got to inventory your farm. You've got to make sure that you understand this information of what's in your farm. We'll give you some hints throughout of how to gather some of this information. You also have to know your user and group security information, so your content databases. How did I secure these content databases? How many web apps do I have? I've got to take some inventory and understand that. I also have implications when I migrate over to claims around custom code. Now, Nathan's going to show you a demo around what that custom code migration might look like. I know this is an IT pro audience and a server audience, so we'll take it easy. There's no more than 300 lines of code. But there are some considerations when you are migrating that you have to think about. When you are planning for migration, you've got to identify the migration scenario, and I'm going to take you through a roadmap in a sec. You're going to count the number of farms because that's important, especially if you're doing SAML claims. With SAML claims, there's a thing called claims encoding underneath the covers. We'll talk a little bit more about what that is, but it basically is we have two farms. Both of those farms have to have the same type of ACL, the same flavor of ACL, otherwise your security won't work. So you have to count the number of farms you have. It's farm specific. For each farm, you're going to do these things. You're going to gather some information. You're going to understand some of the workflows because there's some implications when you migrate from classic to Windows claims and to SAML claims around workflows. And we'll talk about that again, and then the custom code. When we look at all the different claims migration scenarios on a chart, they look like this. The smiley faces represent things that we support out of the box. The kind of medium faces represent things that are supported within the platform, but you've got to do some additional work. Sad face there is the classic, right? We don't really want you to work with classic anymore because there's some things that just don't work with classic. We've tried to make the shift over to claims, and this is one of the releases where we're actually pushing that. The ones that we're going to focus on for this particular talk are those scenarios. We're going to walk you through a classic to classic scenario. What does that look like if you actually want to do that? What's it look like when you go from a classic to a Windows claims, classic to SAML claims, and also what's it look like when you go SAML to SAML? This is about the part where we lose the first third of the audience over there. Yep. High-level migration. Here's what you're doing. You are going to configure and migrate your web app. For each content database, we're going to go and dig in and look for the number of sites. We're going to grab those sites. We're going to grab the user information within those sites. And we're going to move you from the old user format of NTLM or domain slash to a new user format. That new user format depends on your scenario. The other thing we're going to do when you do the migration within PowerShell is we're going to add a new policy, a new web app policy for your site. That policy is represented on the bottom there as PowerShell policy, and we'll show you where that pops up. But you'll see that there's a different claim encoding for that, and I:0W administrator sees a different format there, different claim format. And here we go. Here's how we tested this. What we did was we built up a SharePoint 2010 box, and on that box we configured all these different things. We configured a classic web app, and we took that content database and moved it over. That's one scenario. Another scenario is we took that same classic one and migrated over to Windows claims. We had another one where, let's say you had a 2010 site, and you wanted to enable it for partner access. You wanted to enable some ADFS. So you're using SAML authentication at that point. So we did that on a 2010 site, and we're going to see what that's going to look like when you bring it over. The other thing we did was when you brought over a classic web app, what happens when I want to migrate that one and now enable partners, not on the 2010 side, but on the 2013 side? How do I actually do that? So that's what we did for you, every one of you. That's the roadmap, big scary roadmap. First, what we're going to take you through is classic to classic. That method is deprecated. So to read this little chart here that we put together, you're going to go from an authentication mechanism, you're going to go to another authentication mechanism. The method is in the middle that we're going to walk you through the different ways that you can do it. Some prep that you may or may not need for that particular method, and then some optional things that you've got to look at depending on your scenario. So you'll see some different things light up as we walk through the scenarios. The first one here is classic to classic. And here it is deprecated. It's not the default mode, not available in the UI. You've got to use PowerShell to actually create it. If you do forget, we do have some warnings and a health rule that pops up. There's no web application preview. It used to be in SharePoint 2010 that if you were running in classic mode, you got web app preview, but if you were running in claims mode, you didn't get web app preview. The reverse, 2013, we want you to use claims because the model changed, and the way that we move identities around is completely different. So you won't get OWA preview if you stay in classic view. This is Office web apps, what I'm talking about here. And the warning there is on the bottom. When you're running through your migration, you're going to see this warning that pops up. It's a pretty scary warning. Basically says, hey, this was deprecated. By eCards, France. I'm a big eCard fan. Boo. We're going to boo you. All right. Coming back. That was the first scenario. Second scenario. Windows claims to Windows claims. So if you have a 2010 site and your 2010 web app is configured for Windows claims, how do I then take that over and bring that over to SharePoint 2013. Actually, my arrow's incorrect. I apologize. I'm going from classic. Let me back up. I'm going from classic SharePoint 2010, and I'm moving to Windows claims in SharePoint 2013. My arrow's white. I apologize. So classic to Windows claims. Classic in 2010 to Windows claims in SharePoint 2013. What does that look like? That's going to be an out-of-the-box configuration and some optional things that you've got to think about. If I had service apps, and any of those service apps were using Classic, I've got to think about possibly doing something with them. One that pops out is a secure store. So if I had secure store credentials, and those secure store credentials were storing NTLM credentials, I want to then move them over to claims. I've got to think about that. Right? How do I move those identities over in the secure store? The other thing I've got to think about is code migration, and we'll talk through some scenarios there, and some content cleanup. And the specific thing around content cleanup is around workflows. The thing when you move from classic to Windows claims, one thing that pops out in our testing is the last modified by. For any SharePoint designer workflows that you've created, the last modified by does not get moved over. So you either have to run some script or some code to actually fix that, or just republish your workflows. And when you republish the workflows, it will then rewire up that identity. But out of the box, when you do the migration, that's some content cleanup that you're going to have to do after you migrate. Some of your options for moving to Windows claims, Nathan's going to walk you through them.
So some of the options that we've got, the main option and the recommended option is when you're migrating 2010 to Windows claims, do it on the 2010 farm first. The reason why is that way you're not looking at basically making two variables in the mix. So if you do the upgrade to 2013, it might be a 2013 issue. It might actually be a claims issue. So if you actually did the 2010 upgrade the claim, it's a fairly easy process to do that. And then you can actually go through and make sure that any custom code's working or that anything else in your form's working. And then once you do that, you can move it to the 2013 form. Option number two is we can actually create a classic web app in SharePoint 2013 and mount our content database to that. So we have to do that through a PowerShell. So it's not enabled in the UI, but we do have a PowerShell that can do that, and then you could attach your database to it. Option number three is mount the classic mode into a Windows claim app in the SharePoint 2013. So create a SharePoint 2013 web app and then mount the classic mode to that. The one thing to be aware of is if you do that, your ACLs are still going to be in Windows mode. So you're not going to have actually any permissions to that. It's not going to upgrade your Windows classic credentials to Windows claims. You're going to have to run a PowerShell, really the same PowerShell that you're running in option two to kind of migrate those over. So just be aware of that. And then option four, this is the option we like, is you can also move it to the cloud. So if you want to actually take options of moving over there, migration's a great time to really consider some of those workloads and what to move to 365. OK, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually go through a classic mode to claims migration. We're actually going to show you kind of the walkthrough of the process that you're going to go through. Go ahead. So I've got a 2013 form. I also have a 2010 form, but kind of for the sake of time and flipping between screens, what I ended up doing was creating the classic web app in 2013. And I'm going to go ahead and attach this content database to this. So in the earlier slide, I'm actually taking option two in this case. The reason why I do like, though, having the classic mode out there is I can actually test my environment before I actually move it to claims. So I did the upgrade. I'm going to test it and then move it to the claims environment. So anyway, here's the PowerShell SP new SP web app, and then create it with claims. It's IT Web 2013. And I went ahead and attached my content database to it. So I just did the mount SP content database. And it's got the classic mode of the ACLs in there on the classic web app now. Just kind of show you that out here. So this is my site. And if I go to my central admin, you'll see that when I go to my provider, its default is Windows mode. So it definitely is a classic mode app. So what we're going to do now is we're going to indeed do the migration. So if you've gone out there on the web and looked up any kind of classic to Windows or Windows claims migrations, you'll see that there was a 2010 script for doing that. So this is a 2010 script for doing that. We basically grab the web app. We add the administrators to it. And then we actually do the policies, the migrate users on there. We've changed that in 2013. So in 2013 now, we actually simplified it a bit. So this is actually the new PowerShell for doing the migration in 2013, retained permissions on there. So we're going to go ahead and run this against the server there. Israel's going to entertain you while I type. I actually did on a shorter name. OK, so it's going to prompt you with a couple things. So a couple confirmations on here. This operation is going to trigger a user migration. Yep, we meant for that to happen. And then the other thing, so if you notice in our earlier script that it had the PowerShell to actually add that admin user, well, this one does it for you. So it actually just prompted me, do I want to do that? So we'll go ahead and do that as well. And it's actually going to run through and do the migration. This one actually takes, I think in this environment, probably takes about 30 seconds or so. So I'll go ahead and move on to the next thing, and then we'll have it migrated. So one of the things when it migrates, one of the things that we kind of always talk about is custom code breaking. And so again, we know this is an IT audience, so I won't bore you with all the .NET code. But I do want to kind of show you what types of things break in the environment. So if you look at the code here, you'll see in here that we've got we're grabbing basically the user login. We identify that there's a domain in that login. And then we're also grabbing the Windows principle. So this Windows principle is obviously what's going to break. It's no longer Windows principle in this code. And what we do is, I don't have it on there. Yeah, so one of the things what we do on there then is we actually go in there from Windows principle, do the enroll check, and then grab the group. Well, so in the claims mode, we would actually need to change this. We would go ahead and, instead of actually doing the Windows principle, it's actually a claims principle now. And then, so we grab claims principle, claims identity, and then with claims, we actually have a listing of all the claims that that came in. So in this case, we've got the group SIDS. So what we do is actually check for the group SIDS, see if that's in that group, and then actually do the same check on that. So that's the code part that would break. So again, if you're not doing anything with the Windows principle specifically, you might be fine on the code. But there is one other thing that just to be aware of in there. And so I won't have to go ahead and deploy it. I'm just kind of show this. When I have that web part in Windows mode, you'll see on the right side, you'll notice that the username's different. So username and the user principle. So if I'm actually doing something with that that user data, it's not necessarily going to be in the same format after I migrate it. So that same code, after I've actually done the migration, will actually change to a username of Karen with the Windows claim in there. So you notice that the claims token is in there now. So if I'm actually doing any kind of filtering or any kind of querying with that current user, it actually would break as well. Okay, so migration finished. The web app should be back up, and then we are migrated. So now if I go back into Central Admin, click on that, click on the authentication provider, it actually does the check to see the authentication provider and actually pulls up that's in claims mode. And then if I go into the app itself, it will actually come back as still same experience as far as the app itself and the login, but it's actually going to be a Windows claim now. And it's doing something funky. But
and it's going.
Yeah.
All right. I saw some folks trying to take some screen grabs. So what we did, again, for you, you get some PowerShell. You get some PowerShell. Everybody gets PowerShell. It's an Oprah reference. We put the PowerShell in the slide deck, so you go ahead and pull those down. Here's what happened behind the scenes to give you kind of a different visual of what Nathan just did. In 2010, we had to do this, create an admin claim for ourselves. Then after we did that, it allowed me to get in after the migration, so we did the web app policy. And then the final one was do the migration. So this is actually the script that Nathan just ran. We're just including that there for reference as well. There's the difference. 2010 was more script than 2013. If you are running on the June CU, you can do parallel migration. Here's the script to do it. If you want more write-up of what actually happens behind the scenes, Steve Peschka, he's got a blog post out there that talks about the content migration. Some of the messages that you'll get, we saw these. Again, these are here for your reference. So that you can take them down so that you're not scared when these things are popping up at you. And some errors that you're going to get when you do mount. So this error here is if I have a 2010 content database and it's in classic mode, I mount it to a Windows Claims application, and that Windows Claims application is on SharePoint 2013, I get this error. And that error says, hey, there's an inconsistency. You got to do something in order to get this working. Another thing you have to do, if you have publishing sites or team sites with the publishing feature enabled, or the wiki homepage feature on your team site, you do have to enable your publishing cache accounts. You probably see some error messages inside the event log that talk about the publishing cache. If you ignored them in 2010, you might have been able to get away with it when you were in classic mode. When you're in claims mode, however, Windows claims, it's really hard to get away from it. You get a lot of access denied messages. The way that this pops up is that you get access to that on a home page, but if you navigate to the settings pages, you can still get there. And that's kind of a hint to let you know that something's going on, possibly with my publishing cache. If you see this in the event log, here's how you fix it. You want to create a Portal Super Reader and a Portal Super User account, and you want to run that on your farm, on your web apps. If you had this configured in SharePoint 2010, you do have to reconfigure it, because this setting is stored at the web app level. It's not in the content database, which is what we bring over. We don't bring over the web apps. So keep that in mind. The PowerShell to do that is here. In order to create the Portal Super User accounts, you're going to go and create the Windows Claims Encoded User, and then you're going to create the web app policy for those and then apply it to each web app that you migrate. Sorry, go back. Good?
Yeah, we actually, so on the code migration, we actually already went through that part just because I was in the environment.
Very good. Some other things that you got to consider for the developers in the room, if you are using Claims to Windows Token Service, behind the scenes, if you have a Windows Claims set up on your box, that first line of code, which is security context.isWindowsIdentityAvailable, will look at the claims, find out who issued the user logon name, I'm sorry, the name identifier for that particular user, that particular session, and if it's issued by Windows, then it's going to let you do that second line of code, which is transform that Kerberos, transform that claim to a Kerberos ticket. This is only if you're using Windows claims. If you're not using Windows claims and you're using SAML claims and you're trying to get back to a Windows identity, this will not work. This code will fail. If you're using, so the question was, say that again. I didn't understand you. You lost me, like I said. If you're using Windows claims, and you start with a Kerberos ticket using Windows claims, and you transform that out of the box. SharePoint will transform that to a claims representation. Behind the scenes, that first line of code is Windows identity available. SharePoint will check to see if the actual claim, that user that was logged on, the claims were issued by Windows. Did you log on using Windows? And from a SharePoint side, when I said that SharePoint will treat Windows claims special, this is one of those special things. Underneath the covers, SharePoint also has code to do these same things. So it says, hey, did the original credential come from Windows? And if so, then I'm going to let you get back to the Windows identity. If the original credential did not come from Windows, then I'm not going to make you do this code. I'm not going to do this next code. I'm not going to let you impersonate the user on the thread. I see some ugly faces and some angry faces, so that's why we included this next one. Where's it at? We included the next one. This one, there's one more for you as well. If you want to get the current user on the thread, Nathan showed this as well. Here's how you do it. The old way was http://context.current.identity. If you are feeling frisky and you want to try that, that identity will be iUser. That identity will not be the actual user that logged on. If you do want to get back to the Windows identity or a Windows identity and you go, hey, WIF does it, why can't SharePoint do it? There's a lot of implications around that, too much to get into for this talk because we want to move on to the other scenarios. But in general, SharePoint's trying to protect itself. If you give it a UPN and I can't translate that back to a Windows token because I didn't issue it, I'm not going to let you get back to it from a SharePoint point of view. From a custom code point of view, you can still do this with WIF, and here's how you do it. Right? So out of the box, there's a lot of BI scenarios that use the first way, so you have to start at Windows claims. If you are using SAML claims, this is a way to get back to a Windows credential if you have to do that. And we can talk more about that afterwards for the devs in the room. Here's how you configure the Claims to Windows Token Service. There's a bunch of blog posts out on the internet about this as well, about how to configure this, but here's what you do. Behind the scenes, it's a running service that turns around and takes the claim set, turns it into a Windows identity. That's what the Claims to Windows Token Service does. The account that runs the Claims to Windows Token Service must do these things and must meet this criteria. Must be a local member of the local administrators group, and that's because it has to do some high privileged things like take a token and actually create an identity without your username and password. So it's similar to constrained delegation, what we're doing behind the scenes. All right. Classic to SAML on the roadmap. Here, what we're going to be doing, when you want to move from Plastic to SAML, SAML claims I mentioned was a different format. It was a little different way of doing claims. But there's a way to get there, and that way to get there is with the iMigrate user callback interface. And we'll talk through that in a minute. When you're doing this, and you've got to build some custom code, we have the hooks for you and the APIs for you. We're not going to provide you anything out of the box. However, we do have some demo software. If you want to ping us, we can release them to you. Some prep. You're going to want to migrate your web apps using this method. And you might, may or may not, if you had a custom claim provider in 2010, you may have to recompile it if you attach yourself to some assemblies or something. Or you have to build a new one if you want the people picker experience. So when you're using SAML claims out of the box, there is no way to authenticate that because if we look at just a pure federated world, you don't own the identity anymore. The identity is over there. So for SharePoint to try to find that identity, it's not going to be able to do it, but we do provide you a way to do it. So for the developers in the room, if you want to build a custom claim provider, that's what that is, and that's what you're going to be doing. And again, a secure store, you've got to think about secure store. If I've got credentials in there, I want to do some code migration and some content cleanup. A practice. I hate the word best practice because it's not the best unless you've practiced. So this is one time that we've done for a customer. We practiced this method a couple times. You might find this is the best for you. What we did was we created a classic web app. And we're going to take a copy of that classic web app, and we're going to mount it to a temporary web app on SharePoint 2013. We're going to migrate with the iMigrate user callback, and Nathan's going to show you an example of what that looks like. When we're done, we're going to copy that migrated content database and attach it to the real web application. This is going to allow us to do some parallelization. It's also going to allow us to stage our migration, where I can potentially do this on three or four different environments. I just mount them, make sure that when I mount them, it's configured the way I need it to be configured so it can do the actual migration. I call this a pivoted, so you can make a name for it. You can also migrate the one in place. Kind of not recommended, because if you migrate the one in place, you're going to ruin the one in place if you mess up. So you have to have a backup. Some questions, common questions that we get from customers, what type of storage do I need for this? I see three databases out there. Do I need three databases? Possibly. Depending on how you're doing your backup, depending on how you're doing your pivot, you've got your live one that's running, possibly in read-only mode if you're doing this over a weekend. You've got the copy of the one that you're migrating, and then when you copy it back over for a period of time, you're going to have two of those. So yes, you are going to have three of those. You can limit this a little bit by skipping that middle step and just attaching it right to the production web app if you've got a smaller environment. But this is, again, it's a practice. It's something that you've got to figure out in your environment.
All right, so the first scenario that we did was run the PowerShell, go from classic mode to the Windows claims mode. So you saw that I had this IT website. I went into Windows claims mode. I ran my PowerShell. I converted to Windows claims mode and migrated all the users. And I'm able to log in and actually have my team site comes back, and I actually have all my credentials, all my ACLs are actually in claims modes now. The next mode that we're going to do is the scenario where we're going from a classic mode or a Windows claims mode into a SAML mode. And in that scenario might be if we see this a lot in extranets. For example, you get an extranet, you stand it up, you're running logins for some vendors' partners. Now you need to federate, so you're going to use ADFS to do that. And so that's probably a very common scenario where, okay, I've got all these permissions already in the site. Now I want to stand up ADFS, and I actually enable that in the environment. So we've got this other portal in here where we're actually got ADFS enabled, and then we've got Windows credentials on here. Let me go ahead and go into private mode. So when I go into this, and this is just kind of default behavior, but I'm going into this web app that actually has ADFS turned on to it. I left the Windows ACLs on it as well, so now I can actually go run a migration and go from Windows tokens or Windows claims to a SAML mode as well. So go ahead and log into ADFS. I've enabled the super user in ADFS. And when we actually go out there and look at our permissions for the site, we'll see that that I've got several users in there that we're needing to migrate into claims, into ADFS. So I've got some users. I also have groups, too. So the one thing that when we look at doing the migration, in this case, we're doing it with an application because we wanted to make some additional application logic to this. So one of the things that we do is on first startup of this application, and I won't go through a lot of the code just because it's not really a developer audience, but the first thing that we do on the startup of this application is we go out there and detect on which SAML providers do we have, whether they're trusted providers or if they've got a name provider that we need to migrate to. So we've got a list. We'll actually load up all the list of the different providers that you can migrate to or from. And then what we do is any web app that actually has that trusted provider on there or a named provider on there, we let you select which web app that is, and then we go out there and do detections on which groups and which users need to be migrated. So the one thing to point out in this, whenever you're doing migration, whether you're doing it through code or whether you're doing it through a PowerShell code, is you really need to think about, okay, if I'm going to a SAML provider, how are my groups going to be mapped? So I've got a SID, in a group SID in Windows. If I actually turn on ADFS, am I actually sending that through an ADFS a SAML role? And if so, how am I actually doing that formatting? Am I putting a domain on there? Am I actually doing just a straight SID? Or am I actually doing a named role because I'm getting those from a partner? So really important to kind of think about how that's going to happen. The other thing is on user, same thing. What's the identity for the user? The one thing to be aware of is when you do this, SharePoint actually has a named identifier. That's probably not the one you're going to use. You're going to actually use the mapping that you did in your PowerShell. So in this case, I'm actually doing UPN. So I want to make sure that whenever I do my lookups for these users, that I'm actually going to map it to UPN, and then I'm going to map it to the group role. I probably should have actually talked about that while I ran this. But anyway, that's kind of the important things to notice on that, is to really look at the mappings and how you're doing that. And then also look at the user mappings for that as well. So what ends up happening, though, is when we actually do this this migration tool, we actually take each of these Windows claims, or Classic, we do both, and we actually re-encode those to the credential coding of the token provider. Oh, that was quick. All right. We'll go ahead and refresh. So now when I go and look at one of these users, you'll notice that now it's an ADFS user for that. And then I'll go ahead and open up one of these group ones too, the help desk. So you'll see there, I got that it's a help desk, that it's the ADFS and the credentials on there. And you can't see this, but it's actually a role type that's in that claim.
So the question is around the content database. So the information that I have here is in the content database. How does it relate to what's in the profile? Is that your question? What ties them together is that identity, whatever trusted identity you're using for that particular farm. So if you're using a trusted identity provider in ADFS, you would configure whatever trusted identity specific identifier, like a UPN or an email address. You configure that for your user profile, and then you'd resync from the identity source. So let's say an example would be I'm in an extranet, and I have users in an Active Directory. I federate with an external partner. When I log them on, I actually stand them up as my extranet user, and then I pass the extranet user to SharePoint. So that's a common scenario that we've seen. In that case, you'll take the user profile, you'll connect it up to that external one, and when they authenticate, the wire-up of their trusted identity user ID and what's in the user profile gets wired up, and then they'll be able to get a profile for them. You just configure that in the user profile sync on the import, and you say, I'm using a trusted identity provider instead of the Windows provider, and then you tell it, and behind the scenes, SharePoint will then generate that correct encoded user identifier ID, and then it links them all up behind the scenes. But you do have to do a resync. If you aren't migrating from an existing user profile, just do a resync, get that stuff back over. Yep.
That's right.
Yep. So the question was, do we lose properties that the user filled out? In a migration scenario, when we bring the user profile over, no. So the question is, how does it affect audiences and roles and stuff that's in LDAP? So in your scenario, you have an LDAP database with FBA, or you have an LDAP database with like ADFS or Ping or something like that? What's your scenario? AD? HR area. Okay, so you so in your scenario, so what he mentioned was, hey, we've got this Active Directory where the users authenticate, but I've got this other LDAP database where I store some additional information. How do I pull those together into either a profile or a SAML claim representation? That's a great case for you to use a custom claim provider. There's a couple places you can do that. You can either do it in the SharePoint side, where once they authenticate, I call out to that LDAP with their identity, bring them in, and actually issue those LDAP claims. That's one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to push those off to the IDP. Whether you're using, so if you're using ADFS, it would be a custom attribute store, and then when I authenticate, I actually augment them at the IDP layer, and then when it comes to SharePoint, I'm just using those claims within SharePoint. But that's a good opportunity for a custom claim provider to aggregate those.
We'll go on.
Yep. All right, if you're going to migrate from Classic to SAML or Windows Claims to SAML, you can use the tool that Nathan showed. You can write something, or you can use PowerShell. In this case, you're going to write a custom assembly, so the developer is going to write something. That assembly is going to implement an interface. SharePoint's going to then call back to that interface whenever it's migrating every single user, and you have an opportunity to do something with that user. So that's what that iMigrate user callback looks like. For the devs in the room, the slides are here for your reference. This is what that code will look like. We're going to go ahead and call it for every single user. So the iMigrate user callback basically says, allows somebody an opportunity to actually do something with that identity. So SharePoint's going through, taking up a user account. It's going to grab a user account. It's going to raise an event. It's going to call out this guy. It's going to say, hey, I'm migrating. And here's the identity that I'm migrating. You go through, I investigate that identity, do some magic. And then in our case, what we did was we took the magic, we re-encoded that NT credential, encoded it to the SAML credential. And as Nathan mentioned, there's some stuff you've got to think about, right? What do I do with groups? What do I do with, you know, do I issue them as roles? Do I keep them as groups? Do I keep SIDs? Do I issue names? Things like that. And another code sample here to kind of dig into it basically feeds from the top code sample to this one here, this particular snippet. We'll go through and migrate and evaluate an account and then do something with that account. These are just stubs. These are not full-fledged pieces of code. These are just stubs, but it gives you an example of the type of code that you're going to have to write when you are doing this. Migrating from Windows claims to SAML, you do have to go and, you know, one thing that you have to keep in mind, you might have an old content database out there that has old users or orphaned user accounts. When I bring those credentials over, I might have to write some code to filter those orphaned users out. Right? I don't want to just migrate them all en masse. So I might have to do some stuff. Another common scenario that I've seen around migration is, well, we're coinciding our federation initiative with domain consolidation or domain migration. So I've got, you know, domain A, and I'm moving over to domain B. All my credentials are going to be a little weird when you bring them over because I didn't maintain SID history or something. So in that case, you're going to have to do something different. So again, we included these as stub references. You can go ahead and ping us afterwards if you want some more information about that. But these are there in the deck, so you can use them. All right. If I haven't lost you by now, I will lose you here. We're going SAML to SAML. What happens when I set up an ADFS environment in SharePoint 2010, and I'm migrating over to SharePoint 2013, and I have SAML, and I'm moving over to SAML? This is actually a different scenario. How many folks have SharePoint 2010 configured with Federation, ADFS? A good number of you. What about something else? Ping, I don't know what else, ACS? Yeah? Oh, good number of you guys doing Federation. Great. First thing you're going to do is you're going to know that this is going to be your migration scenario. All the other scenarios that we talked about do not apply to you if you're using SAML. If you're not using SAML. If you are using SAML, this one applies. First thing you're going to do is you're going to take an encoding inventory. And I'll show you a little bit about what that looks like in a bit. And then you're going to possibly migrate your claim provider or bring your claim provider over and just use it or implement one. Maybe you didn't do one in 2010, and now I want to enhance that experience. I'll do that in 2013. Same things apply around service apps, code migration, and content cleanup. So what is this claims encoding thing that you speak of? Underneath the covers, this is farm specific, we encode the claims. It's done internally for performance reasons. And what we're trying to do is keep track of the custom claim type and keep track of the claim types that are issued and managed for each particular identity provider and make sure we're not reusing them and having multiple ones enabled. So the way we do that is we encode it using a Unicode character. And you've probably seen this, I:0W, the Windows claims, that does not have this coding character. But if you've seen it in SAML, where you've seen the little zero with the apostrophe or the funny G, this is what we're talking about. It is an immutable list. What that means is once you create it, once you've established this, you cannot get it back out. Right? It's in there forever unless you rebuild your farm. So keep that in mind. It used to be that you had to install them in the same order. But if you have the June CU, or if you do this in SharePoint 2013, you don't have to install them in the same order. I'll walk you through what that PowerShell looks like. The example here that we have four different claim types. We have an authentication method claim type. That one is not out of the box, so it's going to be encoded with a character that equates to 505. The two in the middle there are reserved claim types. Internally, there's a handful of claim types that will always encode the same. Those are all the Windows claim types. The last one there is ASCII decimal 507, which is Windows account name. So if I happen to map that from ADFS or Ping or some other custom claim provider, that's going to get encoded with a custom character. Any custom claims that I issue when I created my SP Trusted Token Issuer, that's not out of the box. It's also going to get encoded with a different character, and it's going to be in order. Why is that a problem? Let's walk through a typical claims registration. I run this, I have my test ADFS and my test farm. That's what my claim looks like, and that's how the encoding looks. That's how you break down the encoding. What that means is test ADFS there is the issuer. The arrows are a little off. The ANYA character there is the encoding for that claim type. Here in my case, I'm using my test custom claim type, but now I've just used the slot. Right? So if I move this over to production now, let's say I configured this in one environment, configured it up to test ADFS, same environment, I turn around and configure that for production. What does that look like? I've got my prod ADFS, and now I use my custom claim provider. My next encoding character, in this case, is that funny-looking A. So when you do this in your environments, you're basically creating a map of all these claims encodings. In order to get all the claims encodings back out, we just include a little PowerShell here. If you're on the June CU, here's what you do. And this PowerShell here will just generate the PowerShell that you run on the other side. So that's all that this does. Pretty straightforward. It just spits out the characters in your farm. And then you just take this and run it, put it on your other side. And now you've got your two farms in sync. So now when you create your new Trust Identity Token Issuer on the 2013 side, when you say, I want to use this claim type, it will go ahead and behind the scenes map it to the type because it's already mapped. It will map it to the ASCII character there. And your ACLs, when you bring those content databases over, will now be matched up. Because underneath the covers, if you really dig down deep, we're doing string matching, right? It's lowercase string matching. We've got to make sure that we match our strings. If you don't have SharePoint, if you don't have the June CU, you can still dump them by provider. So if you have a trusted identity provider there, you go ahead and dump the claim types and you can get the encoded string. You can then take that encoded string and run that PowerShell, run some PowerShell over on the other side for 2013. So that's going to cover that. And if you disabled or removed your trusted identity token issuer and for some reason you can't run that PowerShell and you don't know and you don't have inventory, you can still get them out. This is brute force, not recommended during production times, but you can still get them out. You go into SQL, run that SQL command, and no more SQL commands against your config database. That's going to generate an XML. It's going to return an XML column. You're going to click on that XML column. It's going to give you a big blob of XML, and you're going to look for that next index. That next index will give you a hint as to how many encoding characters I have. I've seen some pretty messy ones. But there you go. If you want to know what that character actually becomes from a Unicode point of view, if you're using Excel 2013, you can actually run those functions on there. And you can say Unicode number, pass it 506. It'll give you the encoding character. Take that encoding character, paste that into your PowerShell. And that's going to be the encoding character for that particular claim type, for those claim types that come out of SharePoint. In order to add new encodings on the 2013 side, you can run that script. You can also do this on 2010, again with the June CU. So you can add new claims encodings and code them. When you add new encodings, you're going to get some scary messages. The first one is, hey, I'm about to add a claim encoding. Are you okay with that? And you go, yes, I am. And it says, hey, are you sure? Because this is a, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it's an immutable operation. You do it, and you better have a backup in case you do this wrong. There are ways to get out of it. There are ways to, you know, if you have a bunch of trust identity token issuers set up, or you've got a bunch of claim providers that are installed, uninstalled in your production farm, you might have this problem and you don't know it. So do some inventory and see what you have before you do this, and then try to clean that up ahead of time. At a very, very wavy hand high level, this is what you're going to be doing for sample to SAML. Just breaking down the process here at a step-by-step. Inventory to claims encodings in one of the methods that I mentioned. You're going to sync the claims encodings using one of the methods I mentioned. You'll migrate your trusted provider in your realms. Migrate your content databases. If you're using SAML to SAML, in your case, you're just going to detach and reattach. And underneath the covers, since it's already configured, that web app that you're attaching it to is configured for SAML. All your ACLs and everything will be fine. No migration necessary. You just bring that over. Same thing for Windows claims. If you're using Windows claims on 2010 and you want to bring it over to 2013, there's no migration necessary. It's just a straight detach, reattach. You're going to add it, your additional web app policies there, and then you're going to test, and then test again. And then, if I haven't mentioned it, you're going to test some more. So, what did we learn when we went through this migration test? When Nathan and I put this talk together, we just wanted to make sure that we try to cover as many scenarios that we've heard from our customers and our partners. We also wanted to make sure that you were armed with as much information as you could. So we tried to test and try to spend a lot of time going through all the different scenarios and you know, make sure that we gave you as much, armed you with as much as you needed. One thing that we did learn early on is you got to make sure that you know your SQL minimum requirements. You can attach a content database from an older version of SQL to a SharePoint 2013 version. There's a specific version you have to do, I believe it's SourcePack 1 or SourcePack 2 of SQL 2008, and to bring that over to 2010. So you've got to upgrade your SQL before that actual content database will actually mount to your new web app. So keep that in mind. Try to clean up as much in 2010 as possible. Don't bite off two migrations at the same time. Try to do it in 2010 now while you have it. Or if you're starting clean, then go ahead and start clean in 2013. But you want to try to do as much of this in 2010 as possible.
Option 4 is looking pretty good.
Or you can use it as an opportunity to reassess your cloud strategy. All right, some other things to watch out for. We talked about the ECM and the publishing cache. We talked about search. Search alerts when you're using SAML don't work. Around the fence there, I think they got that working again. When we tested it for beta 2 and I had a chance to retest it for RTM, I think that's working again. I just didn't update my slide. But search alerts, that's something to keep in mind. Search alerts are attached to the user. And if you're migrating from a classic to a SAML user, those alerts are going to be, you're going to have to update those when you migrate them. BI, there's a bunch of talks this week around BI, enabling federated scenarios for BI. I think Nathan's got a talk on BI. We'll look for that. Secure store, if you're storing credentials. I mentioned that before. If you're doing that, you've got to keep an inventory, see what it is you have to do, and you have to migrate those before you go to production in 2013. Last few notes there. Office clients, there are some office client requirements. If you're on XP, please get off. If you're using Office 2003 and XP don't have plumbing to handle, if you're going over to SAML, they don't have plumbing to actually handle the pop-up that comes back from SAML. So the plumbing is actually in Windows 7, Office 2007, the more of the modern operating systems. And third-party tools. If you are using any third-party tools, you have to keep that in mind as well. Make sure that they support, if you're doing SAML, you're doing Federation, make sure that they understand SAML and Federation, and make sure that they can prove to you that they understand SAML and Federation before you actually think about bringing on some third-party tools. Because we've seen a few cases where the third parties are still catching up, especially on the federated scenarios. Dead silence. This is awesome. Nobody passed out. I'm happy. Questions. We left a lot of time for questions towards the end. Yes, ma'am. So I misspoke. There's some, like, you've got to align some stars before that statement is true. And I didn't align the stars for you. I'm sorry. So the comment was, hey, are you telling me I've got to get off of XP just to get on SharePoint 2013? If you're using federated scenarios and SAML, yes.
So it's the ADFS.
ADFS scenarios and the federated scenarios. Yeah. Will it work? In some cases, yes. If the user goes to a browser, authenticates, goes back to Office, opens up the document, we pass all the cookies, and everything works. If they just open up a document straight from Office 2003 on XP, sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. It depends on how the cookies and all this other stuff. If you're using, what's the proper phrase for it, a fruit device or another operating system, your mileage may vary around their cookie support. We're having problems with customers using Macs and iPads with SAML and the way that the Safari browser actually handles cookies.
But just to be clear, mm-hmm. the first scenarios that we talked about where we're taking kind of the Windows app, the classic mode and moving into a Windows claim, those scenarios will work.
Those are fine. Those
across
are just
devices. Kinda,
yeah,
well.
Those are just classic user ID and password. Yeah. What I'm talking about are the ADFS ones. Yep. Beg your pardon?
The
question was WebDAV and Explorer View. Will those continue to work in federated scenarios? For classic and Windows claims, yes. Yep. For SAML, yes and no. Yep. It depends on, you can't just go to a WebDAV share because the WebDAV share doesn't have the capability to prompt you back for an authentication mechanism. So I say yes and no because if I've authenticated through the browser and I've got a cookie and I haven't done my super security thing, and it's passing my cookies along. It might work for you, but it's not going to be a recommended thing. It's not going to be something that's going to work consistently. So if you need Explorer View and you need WebDAV, then you've got to think about the scenarios you want to enable for Federation, and you might either want to shut those off for Federation or move those scenarios off to other environments so that maybe you have like a federated scenario that doesn't have WebDAV with Explorer View. We've got another one with Windows Classic and Windows Claims that actually does require that. Yep. So the question is Kerberos required to move the claims? No. You can still do NTLM on your IIS websites. It's recommended that you do Kerberos for a lot of the backend stuff just because of the performance benefits, but you don't have to do Kerberos to move to claims. Red shirt. So the question is, what happens with TFS integration? That depends on the version of TFS. Come ping me afterwards. because I want to make sure I got the right. I want to make sure I give you the right information. I don't have the right information, but I want to give you my contact so you can I can follow up with you. And that gentleman over here has a question. So the question is there a roadmap for getting reporting services working with claims? I think. Come to me afterwards. I'm not the expert, but I will find somebody.
I think 2012 does work with claims.
2012?
Yeah, does support claims. There is support for claims and reporting services 2012, at least from a Windows claims mode. As far as kind of other federated modes, then that I don't think is supported still.
Sure.
You gave us a scenario for going classic to classic. Now, how about if 10 months later you want to go to claims? You didn't tell us how to do that.
So the scenario is, well, what if I go from classic to classic, stay in that mode for a little while, and then later on move to Windows claims? So you can convert the web application at any time. The recommendation is that you don't stay in classic in 2013. You don't stay in that mode too long. The reason is because there are things under the covers. There's some other features that we've built that specifically rely on the Windows claims. So like I mentioned, the web applications, Office web apps, you're going to lose that functionality if you're in classic mode. So we do understand, though, just getting it over there sometimes can be hard if you got a lot of content. You have terabytes and terabytes of content. So options for you would be either to move to claims, Windows claims in 2010, and then attach those over, or when you're out of your classic mode and you've tested your apps, you can just run the convert web application in SharePoint 2013, and that's going to convert your current classic web app to a Windows claims web app. Sir. No, so the question was, if I've got a custom claim provider, do I have to rebuild it? If you're using just the out-of-the-box APIs, you can just take your WSP, deploy it to 15. There's a switch that you have to do on your solution when you install it to actually install the feature into two hives, the 14 and 15, so there's some differences there. But if, as long as you've used the out-of-the-box kind of references, you should be okay. But if you use like a specific one, I'm trying to think of one like a secure, there's one for secure store that actually points to the 14 hive. We do some assembly redirection, but you know, you just.
The only thing to note is when you deployed it in a custom claim provider in 2010, it auto turned on. So you had to turn it off on the web apps. In 2013, it defaults to auto turn off. So just be aware of that. You have to run some PowerShell, which is kind of nicer anyway. So that should be fine.
I'm trying to see if I have a slide for that. So the question was around the people picker. What happens with my people picker and name resolution? If I'm using if I'm in a federated scenario, and I federate with ADFS or federate with Azure. My out-of-the-box experience for picking users is I type something in the box, I push enter, SharePoint will resolve everything. And when you think about the resolve process, what actually SharePoint is saying is, I have no idea what that string means. I don't know if that's an email address, if it's a role, if it's an account name, if it's a role type, I have no clue. So what I'm going to do is take the string, and for every claim type that you have that's associated with a string type, I'm going to think that that's what that is. So that's the out-of-the-box behavior. What a claim provider does is it allows you to hook into that pipeline and make decisions around what the user typed in and actually provide some smarter resolution around that. But in a federated scenario, SharePoint's not going to reach across and go to, you know, live ID and go identify your user. It's not going to do that. The idea behind federation is that you forget about the user account and you're using roles or you're using some other way to authorize that user. They're going to authenticate one way. I'm going to authorize them somewhere else, some other way. So, you know, kind of the idea behind users is they pick email addresses or they pick users, right? That's kind of the mentality that they're in. Yes, sir. Jumping in the back.
About that question specifically, cases, users already have logged on to the site.
Mm-hmm.
So the user information has, you know, some legible information about the user. Is there a way that the people here can pick both from the user information and, you know, whichever identity provider the web app is connected to? Because back in 2007, you could pick both from, you know, Windows FBA and user information list.
Mm-hmm.
And starting in 2010, it's either or. So you can configure, you know, with PowerShell, you can say the configure to only pick from the users on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't add any additional user because you pretty much that user.
So adding users. OK, sync up with us afterwards, and then we'll just talk to make sure I got the scenario right. But I get your point. I get your point. I hear you. And yes, there's ways around that. Let's talk about it afterwards. Yep. Because I'm in the way of the next session.
A related point, if you've got ADFS as the just providing the token, but it's based on AD as the identity provider,
mm-hmm.
Is there any way to get that to resolve for people quicker, or do you still have to basically do the custom claim provider?
It's still going to be a custom claim provider. We actually have code that resolves that for you that we've got posted out there. That's right. It's still not. Yeah. So the new identity framework in .NET 4.5 actually does some of that resolution automatically. In SharePoint, it doesn't do that still. So 2013, you're still kind of the same boat that you were in 2010. Yep. But you will see the new Windows identity framework actually does do that. It's the effective user. It automatically determines the effective user even in an ADFS situation. Yep. So it's going that way. Yep.
All right. Thank you guys for coming. I definitely appreciate it. Appreciate all the questions. Come up to us.